don't know about you. Didn't it seem like everything lasted so much longer when you were a kid? Of course, that meant that you had to wait longer too. You know, even the wait for those good times seemed like, you know, you had to wait forever. But it seemed like they stayed around long. We wallowed in a little bit better. Well, today we are going to look at two chapters in Job as we have been going back and forth through these dialogues with Job's and his friends and looking at the narrative there and learning where the gospel actually is a lot of it is embedded in the book of Job and how Job, he had some prophetic thoughts, but yet because he did not have the complete story, he only sometimes had the yearnings for those things, and even though he would state better than he really knew. There was something in his heart that would be aching for something that we know we now see is real. But he didn't, even though he knew that God made him to need that. And he could express that. And sometimes his friends didn't like that very much because they wanted the system as opposed to the relationship. So we're going to listen to Job talk a little bit about these same things. We're, again, picking up the conversation just after his friend Eliphaz once again sort of tried to call him to the carpet, made some sort of sideways accusations to Job, which seems like every one of them do every time they talk. So we pick up when Job replies to Eliphaz. And it's in 23, Job 23. So if you've got your Bible, pull it out. If you need to pull up your phone, Job chapter 23, that's where we're going to be. And I'm looking at the NIV version. You may have another, but we'll probably be close enough. It says, then Job replied, even today, my complaint is bitter. His hand, talking about God, is heavy in spite of my groaning. If only I knew where to find him, if only I could go to his dwelling. Do we feel like that sometimes? When trouble has come upon us, and then sometimes we're fortunate enough to have friendly commiserators come try to help us, and unfortunately it's to no avail. Where what we want to know is, where can we go? We want to go somewhere where we can know that God will hear us. We know that's where He is. We feel that. Do you feel that way? You ever had that? Sometimes when we have that, we will run to a place where we have associated God speaking to us or moving in our lives in the past. So sometimes people will go literally hours to go be in those kinds of places where they felt like God has spoken to them in the past. Or it may be that it's just sort of a place like, and they end up removing themselves from wherever they are and going to a place like. Or for me, it's just find a place where I'm not inside and I'm looking at the stars and I'm listening to the birds chirp and the squirrels, and if it's raining, listen to rain, those kinds of things. And it reminds me, this is where God has met me in the past. We have that longing, especially whenever we've encountered trial and difficulty and trouble, and we're looking for some solace and some help, because it sometimes feels like even well-meaning folks just can't say enough. You ever been there? Job has that kind of feeling expressed here. He said, I would state my case before him and fill my mouth with arguments. I would find out what he would answer to me and consider what he would say. Would he oppose me with great power? No, he would not press charges against me. There an upright man could present his case before him, and I would be delivered forever from my judge. So what are two things that he's stating right here? That if he could go, when he could find this place where God is, what is it that he knows would happen? Boy, I'm sure that wouldn't hurt. What has Job said continually about his culpability? You know, these three friends are pointing their fingers, making sideways insinuations about His life. He is continually held what? Okay. I've done nothing to bring this on, guys. So what's he saying about this time? If he could find this place with God, what would he do? What would he say? What would he find?
I would find out what he would answer me and consider what he would say. Would he oppose me with great power?
Now that is a question, but he answers his own question. So it's a rhetorical question.
He says, no, he would not press charges against me. There an upright man could present his case before him, and I would be delivered forever from my judge.
So what would he find if he could actually get to this place? What's he saying would happen?
Okay.
He would be absolved. Okay. In other words, if he could find this place, he could talk to God. It's not that he would persuade God necessarily. It's that God would agree with him in his integrity. And he has not done anything to bring this on. His sin did not make his trouble happen. Because he did not sin to make this trouble happen. He is not saying that he's never sinned. What he's saying is, I did not do anything. There's nothing in my character. And God knows that. And if I had this opportunity to be before him, he would justify that. Now, when we have this heavenly perspective of what's going on, could we say that Job is dead on? If the book starts, this narrative starts with God, and all the angels are called together, and he goes, look, can you see Job? Here's my boy. He is a guy that walks the way I want him to walk. Have you seen him? What do you think? Does Job have it right? In this case, because we can see behind the earthly veil, we know that he is dead on. He's exactly right.
Verse 8, he says, but if I go to the east, he is not there. If I go to the west, I do not find him. When he is at work in the north, I do not see him. And when he turns to the south, I catch no glimpse of him. But he knows the way that I take. When he has tested me, I will come forth as gold.
You would think that the statement he made first there would not go with the statement he made second. Usually if somebody says, I tried to find God and I couldn't find him anywhere, what's the next thing they would say? He must not care. He must be absent. He may not even be. But that's not what Job says. Job says what?
Okay. He knows where I am, and what does he perceive?
Okay, he's innocent.
And he gives us one of these prophetic illustrations of what's going on in his situation.
And that would be the idea of being tested. And then he says, come forth as gold. You get the image. The only reason I get this image is because whenever I was 10 years old, I had a friend that loved to make pewter. Evidently, he and his dad had gotten into making these pewter army, cast army men. And so they would melt down lead, and then I watched them do a funny thing. And whenever they heated it up, they would scrape off the stuff off the top before they would pour that lead into the mold that would cast the little army men. That is the idea of what Job is talking about here. The idea of removing the dross from the pure heated up metal. And so he's saying God would refine him through this stuff. So the remarkable thing is that Job has a grasp of what is actually taking place, which is diametrically opposed to the three amigos who are sitting on the other side of this conversation, who have no idea what God is really doing through all of this, because they are locked and loaded with a system of thinking that will not allow them to see God as personal, but cause them to see God as arbitrary, fill in the blank, uncaring. How would you put it?
He says, my feet have closely followed his steps.
And they have.
I have kept to his way without turning aside. And he has. I have not departed from the commands of his lips. He hasn't. I have treasured the words of his mouth more than my daily bread. That seems to be the testimony. He knows that God, if he were to have that conversation, would acknowledge that all these things are true. And he's right. But that is opposed to the accusations of these commiserators who have come to try to help him through all that he's experiencing. Verse 13 says, "But he stands alone, and who can oppose him? He does whatever he pleases. He carries out his decrees against me, and many such plans he still has in store." Now, what's the ironic part of this? All right. What are God's plans for Job? So in doing that, there's twofold result. One is that in heavenly, Satan gets showed up. And two, what Job knows is going on is actually going on. He is being refined. So there's two parts to that. So when Job's being refined, the plans that God has is that he would become more of what God intends for him to be. A lot of times we continually forget, because we're human and we're locked into time, that God is not. And since God is not locked into time, he has the ability not only to see where we came from, but where we are going at once, knowing what we will become through the events that we encounter in life. So God had confidence, but God was not locked. He had confidence in Job because he was not locked into time the way that we are. He knew the end result. He knew what he intended to do through Job. And he knew what sometimes for us seems kind of hokey, that on the other end of the story, Job is restored and affirmed in almost every way that he had lost in his life. It's returned. Now, there's no way you can ever remove the pain of losing children. So I don't know that that's necessarily something that we can say is there. But he is restored. His integrity is affirmed. His fortune is restored to him, and his standing in the community is also restored to him. That's got to be a God thing. If you've got friends like these three guys, and that could happen, that's pretty miraculous if you think about it. So he said, "That's why I'm terrified before him. When I think of all this, I fear him. God has made my heart faint. The Almighty has terrified me. Yet I am not silenced by the darkness, by the thick darkness that covers my face." Do you understand that feeling? Even though Job knows and gets what's going on, do you think that you would be in the same place? Well, you do know everything that he knows, and you know more. You know more about what God's plan and purpose is in the world than Job did. And whenever trouble befalls you, how do you look at it? Do you look at it any different than Job? Even when you know, I get there, but I don't get there fast. Just being honest. My first thought in trouble or adverse circumstance or difficulty or pain or whatever you want to say can be thrown our way. I'm going to be honest with you. My first reaction is not, "Oh, this is going to test me and make me more like Jesus." And I know that. That is not the first thing that I think of. I would love for it to be, and I would love for that to bring me. I get there, but it takes me a while. You know, a lot of times it's a whole lot easier to think, you know, this darkness. You know, it's not like I don't blame God. Now that I am better on. Now that was me whenever I was probably pre-believing and then early believing. You know, it was easy kind of take that road. You know, why God? Why are you doing this to me? Because that's like you're saying you blame God. Sorry, it's the same question. And I don't do that as much anymore, but that doesn't mean that I always remember what's going on really, which is I'm getting refined and I'm becoming more like Jesus. And
It would be a whole lot easier, wouldn't it, if becoming like Jesus, you didn't have to do all the things or endure all the things that Jesus endured. And one of those things that the New Testament tells us is that funny little word called suffering, of whatever type it may be that God allows us to experience. That is a refining event, refining experience. I get that. Then we launch out into questions. Chapter 24. Why does the Almighty not set times for judgment? Wouldn't it be great? Okay, first round's over. We're going to call it sheep's here, goats here. Okay? Lambs this side, rams that side. Why must those who know Him look in vain for such days? Now he's talking about judgment. He's wanting it. He is wanting judgment because he knows he is not at fault. He didn't do anything to bring on what has happened to him. So he is welcoming judgment because he knows God will vindicate him. He does not fear judgment. Now, you take it to our end of the story, that we, since we know the full story, we know what God's done in Jesus, we too, of all people, have the greatest opportunity to see and understand that in Christ, we do not have to fear judgment. Although we will all be judged for the things that we've done, the great thing is that Jesus has covered those things that would separate us from God forever. Men move boundary stones. They pasture flocks. They have stolen. These are all bad things, by the way. They drive away the orphan's donkey and take the widow's oxen pledge. That's Simon Legree on all those cartoons you watched when you were a child. The bad guy. You know, I'll tie the girl to the railroad tracks. That's that guy. They trust the needy from the path and force all the poor of the land into hiding. Like wild donkeys in the desert, the poor go about their labor of foraging food. The wasteland provides food for their children. They gather fodder in the fields and glean in the vineyards of the wicked. Lacking clothes, and they spend the night naked. They have nothing to cover themselves in the cold. They are drenched by mountain rains and hug the rocks for lack of shelter. The fatherless child is snatched from the breast. The infant of the poor is seized for a debt. Lacking clothes, they go about naked. They carry the sheaves, but still go hungry. They crush olives among the terraces. They tread the winepress, yet suffer thirst. The groans of the dying rise from the city, and the souls of the wounded cry out for help. But God charges no one with the wrongdoing. Does it seem like that? You see how that goes with what he starts with? Why does the Almighty not set times for judgment? Don't you and me sometimes just go, man, I wish God would just put his finger down and stop all this nonsense? I'll make a confession. I had a crazy thought this week. I've had it about up to here with politics, okay? And I was thinking, well, what if I just went on Facebook and I just put this little blurb that said, you know, I'm just one short little Southern preacher. And would people join with me if I put this out and just said, it's time to return to talking to one another like human beings. And let's not vilify and demonize everybody that disagrees with us. And let's have conversations that have purpose. And I realized, you know, I would have lost most everybody at the end of the first sentence. It's tiring, is it not? Don't we just want to say, I just wish God would come and stuff a sock in this politician's mouth. And then I wish he would put a bunch of something else in another guy's mouth. And then he would tape it shut. Because these guys can't, they're not advancing anything aside from a position or a culture that I do not understand or appreciate. So I get, you know, these are guys that you feel like would, you know, if they're your buddy and you know them, they're great, but if they're not your congressman, they're miserable. You ever heard them say, you know, it's funny how that works. My congressman is a guy that I know. He's a good guy. He'll do everything. You know, he's not like that. But other people look at him as a dirty, rotten scoundrel. And I look at somebody else's congressman who they love and they appreciate and they trust, and I think he's a dirty, rotten scoundrel. Isn't that the way it is? Still, we can learn to have conversations with one another and really deal with things if we could get beyond the structures of the agendas. Yes, here's the truth. There is a day where there is going to be judgment. I don't want that day. Now, the funny thing is I have this tension within me. There's part of me that desires for that day 3 weeks ago. And there's part of me that says no, because God is still at work. And there are people that God is working in and He's moving to change. And they may respond. And so God is kind and slow, in as much as I desire for there to be justice now or yesterday, God says, if I had done that with you the day before you came to me, would you feel the same way? There are those who rebel against the light, who do not know its ways or stay in its path. When daylight is gone, the murderer rises up and kills the poor and the needy. In the night, he steals forth like a thief. The eye of the adulterer watches for dusk. He thinks, no one will see me. And he keeps his face concealed. In the dark, men break into houses, but by day, they shut themselves in. They want nothing to do with the light. For all of them, deep darkness is their mourning. They make friends with the terrors of darkness. Yet they are foam to the surface of the water. Their portion of the land is cursed, so that no one goes to the vineyards. As heat and drought snatch away the melted snow, so the grave snatches away those who have sinned. The womb forgets them, the worm feasts on them. Evil men are no longer remembered, but are broken like a tree. They prey on the barren and the childless woman, and to the widow show no kindness. But God drags away the mighty by His power. Though they become established, they have no assurance of life. He may let them rest in a feeling of security, but His eyes are on their ways. For a little while, they are exalted, and then they are gone. They are brought low and gathered up with all, like all others. Pardon me. They are cut off like heads of grain. If this is not so, who can prove me false and reduce my words to nothing? Now, you know, that last little phrase there was the challenge to the knuckleheads to come back. And what do you say about that? Okay. So all this in this last section that I just read, it's more about the awful things that people do, right? The way that people treat one another. And then once he is through talking about that, he talks about what God does about it. He said, God drags away the mighty by His power. They have no assurance of life. They may have a feeling of security, but He's watching them. For a little while they're exalted, then they're gone. There's an old statistic that's 99.99% true. Everybody dies. Good, bad, and ugly. Everybody dies. Now, for us, we know that that has a different meaning in that, yes, our earthly bodies die, and there is a promise of a resurrection. But there is a judgment that comes that really is true, that actually is awaiting us. That was what the buddies didn't realize, is that they didn't have to be the ones who did the judging.
God was going to do the judging. And though it looked like sometimes the bad guys didn't get their stuff, that God is the one who is the ultimate judge. And there will be a time. There's a lot of gospel in Job. Funny how that works. Anything that you feel like is something you're hearing as you've read these words with me this morning. So what do you want to talk about? Okay? Can you explain that just a wee bit? I want to understand. I mean, I know. Well, Zophar, Bildad, and Eliphaz. Their picture of the world is that you sin, you get spanked here and now. And if you don't sin, you don't get spanked. And if you get spanked and nobody knows what caused that, then you must be sinning, right? Covering it up. This version of the big picture that Job is presenting is different. He's saying God harvests all these folks, good, bad, and the ugly, all together. And it looks for a time like those people who are good, who have not had the bad stuff happen, they get harvested just like the ones that didn't, and then looks like they've got the, in quote, mark of sin for God's judgment. But he's saying God's gonna take all of them. And there's going to be a time where God is the judge. You and I are not the judge. And we can't, in the immortal words of the youth ministers of the world, we're not fruit inspectors. Just as much as we have people that we have great burdens for, that we love deeply and dearly. And if we could, we would snap our fingers, we would say a prayer over them, and they would come to faith in Jesus, and they would begin a relationship with Him. As much as we can pray, and as much as we can snap our fingers, we cannot cause that change to take place in their lives. As much as we talk to them, as much as we pray, we can't bring one into the kingdom that way. It is something that God does by His Spirit. Now, we can be a part of the process because we don't see the end of it. Had that conversation with Luke this week, talking to people about Jesus. And it just comes to the point of, in order to keep from being frustrated, you just have to remember, all you can do is share your story, share what God's done in your life, offer truth, and then realize that God's going to work in that, and you can't make anything happen. That is liberating, and it is also frustrating, because we want to be able to pray the prayer with them, and we want to see their lives go. But that's God doing that. That's not us. And praying a prayer doesn't change somebody. It's the fact that the Holy Spirit does something in a person's life that makes all the change, brings the life of Christ into them. These are all the things that Job was struggling with. Life and death. Integrity. All very important to him. All right, anything else? Mordecai Ham. Remember that name? Mordecai Ham? Mordecai Ham is a guy that a teenage Billy Graham jumped on the back of a pickup truck and drove however many miles with his friends to go look at as they went to go watch a tent revival in rural North Carolina. We all know who Billy Graham is, but we forget who Mordecai Ham is. He was faithful. Did he expect there to be a Billy Graham that night? And the funny thing is, it wasn't just Billy Graham. There were many, many others that were there at that time too, who have had just as significant a life of faith, but we don't know their stories. Just something to think. Russell, would you close?